Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the value of treating patients in non-face-to-face settings. And while this is being done mostly via telemedicine, remote monitoring devices are also growing in importance, both for the health data they can provide and as an additional revenue stream for medical practices. To find out more about the benefits and challenges of remote monitoring technology, Medical Economics Editorial Director Chris Mazzolini recently spoke with Josh Klayman, the CEO of Rimidi. Rimidi is the developer of a software platform that integrates data from remote monitoring devices into a practice's clinical workflow. Chris began by asking Klayman to define remote patient monitoring and explain its benefits to physicians and to patients.
I think maybe it's best to have a little context around that. So just spend a few seconds describing the healthcare ecosystem in the U.S. and some of the issues. So we have about a spend on healthcare, about $3.5 trillion in the U.S., which is edging up to about 19% of GDP, which seems sort of unsustainable. We also have fairly mediocre results in terms of the standard sort of balanced scorecard around health outcomes. And what that means is, particularly in the, with the backdrop of this sort of growing population with chronic diseases, is that we need to change the way we deliver healthcare. Chronic diseases like diabetes, heart failure, CVD, hypertension, et cetera, live with the patient. You know, the patient goes to work with them, they go home with them. And so the old method of sort of in-clinic episodic care of seeing your doctor for 20 minutes once every 6 months just doesn't align with what these diseases require. So RPM is a method, remote patient monitoring is a method of creating a continuous care framework for these patients, particularly those with chronic diseases, but there are some other use cases. With a lot of data now and a huge body of hope that this will both improve patient outcomes and reduce the cost of care delivery.
Obviously, right now in the midst of a global pandemic that has allowed practices and patients to connect via technology in a way that they never had before. So can you talk about how the pandemic has changed the landscape for things like remote patient monitoring?
Yeah. Well, companies like Rimidi have always thought the market would come to us, right? I mean, there are more practices at risk. They're responsible for patient outcomes, for quality metrics, et cetera. So their objectives align more and more with what Rimidi had to offer and other companies like Rimidi had to offer. The COVID crisis has essentially compressed the adoption timeframes for this. So this, a lot of the technologies pre-existed COVID, but now there are physician practices, health centers who are feeling two things. One is they're losing touch with these high-risk populations. So they're losing track of their care. They're not managing these diseases well. And that's combined with this other sort of financial dynamic, which is these health systems are in trouble financially. You know, they've lost a lot of their more profitable procedures, their elective procedures. And so they're looking actively for alternative revenue streams as well. So it's almost like all the dynamics, all the market forces are sort of converging around this sort of compression of the timeframe for adoption of RPM. We talk about technologies, but RPM technologies, RPM programs, et cetera, new ways of engaging remote patient populations.
So what is the revenue benefit for using RPM? And so what's sort of the business case for it?
There was a lot of cynicism around reimbursement for RPM, for the CPT codes involved in RPM. People really didn't know what the denial rates were going to be. The rules weren't really that clear. And probably most importantly, there were co-pays from the patient. So a lot of, whether it was kind of chronic care management, CCM or RPM, a lot of patients were enrolled in these programs and then 2 months later received a bill for a co-pay. And like, I don't even know what I'm paying for. I'm not really sure about the benefit to me. That exposed a lot of issues one about how do you enroll patients, how do you educate them, but also about the financial implications for this. So CMS has done a lot of good work actually in clarifying some of these reimbursement rules. They've also suspended copays, at least for the duration of the COVID crisis. And we believe that will probably last forever, which means that patients are signed up. There's not a financial burden on them. So attrition from these programs is reduced. But also there's a lot more clarity and a lot more confidence from physician groups and health systems that when they apply for these reimbursements, when they track appropriately these CPT codes and the engagement every month with every patient, the denial rates will not be there. And it does become a fairly stable and relatively attractive alternative revenue source.
Are private payers following CMS's movement on this? What's the difference between, you know, maybe Medicare and private payers in terms of the reimbursement landscape?
Private payers are following, and they typically do, which sort of exaggerates the power of CMS. And we see a fairly consistent adoption of these reimbursement approaches for commercial payers as well. And, you know, when you think about the actual dollars, you know, you think about there's typically three CPT codes that are involved in RPM. We usually use this sort of benchmark of about $120, $122 per patient per month of potential revenue. But that can go much higher. It can go to $160 with additional follow-up, with sort of dynamic therapy adjustments, et cetera. But there are other things that are reimbursable that are all surrounding the patient in terms of this more effective remote engagement. For example, patient surveys. There are transitional care CPT codes that can be sort of launched and executed and tracked using the same technology platforms as RPM. So I think what people are finding is when they get into this, and the light bulb suddenly goes on and they're like, wait a minute, we could have always done this. This is literally a more effective way of engaging with patients who live with chronic conditions. They become more and more excited about layering on new engagement themes and approaches to with these populations.
Yeah. What are the other barriers that you hear from physicians that sort of, you know, maybe makes them more hesitant to jump into this? And what are some of the solutions to those potential barriers?
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about clinical inertia and that sort of manifests itself in sort of a cultural inertia. There are good reasons for healthcare to have the sort of clinical inertia, but they are not quick adopters of new programs, new technologies. And what we've seen because of that, there are a lot of physician groups, there are health systems that really haven't developed the muscle around evaluating technologies. They haven't sort of developed the muscle around change management of executing new programs or new ways of engaging patients. So these are very pragmatic, very sort of prosaic issues when trying to move a health system care delivery approach forward. And so, say they believe in the reimbursement, say they've heard from their friends that it actually works, they don't really know how to evaluate this technology. So a lot of these physician groups particularly are looking for sort of turnkey approaches. You know, someone can come in, connect them with the technology is really equipped to not only monitor patients, alert for patients' symptoms, dynamically adjust treatment plans, all those good things. But it can also track minutes, it can track CPT codes, and then dump that data out in a usable format. All these things are really important to drive further adoption or accelerate adoption even further than it has been.
How should physicians get started? Say they want to look at their practice, their patient panel, and say, I want to see what the opportunity here is. You know, what are some ways that physicians can sort of identify the patient populations that would benefit from RPM services?
Well, there are two sides of this, too, that I'll talk about, quality measures and then the RPM reimbursement side. So there are two financial benefits for doing this. But what the typical approach is to either use a platform like ours or use a population health platform, to develop a cohort. And the criteria for defining that cohort have to be patients have two or more chronic conditions, because that's the CMS guideline, right, for RPM reimbursement. So unfortunately, in our population, that's not an uncommon trait. You know, you have diabetes and some sort of hypertension, et cetera. That's the first criteria. The second is looking for patients who are not well managed. They may have diabetes, they have a diagnostic code of diabetes and maybe hypertension, but their A1Cs are out of range, right? They're on the high end. So they're not meeting guidelines in terms of secondary prevention or management. And you develop a cohort of those patients that are target patients, and then you develop a model to enroll X number of patients per month. And what we've seen is that the way you go about enrolling patients, right, engaging them initially, is super important in terms of the patient not dropping out of the program later on. So really educating the patient on why you're doing this, what's their benefit, what are your concerns surrounding that patient, right? Why remote monitoring? Why are you asking them to take these tests? And then what are you going to do with the data? So the other theme around this is that patients are willing to do tests if their clinical staff asks them to. But if after a few weeks they realize no one's looking at their data or no one's acting upon their data, then they're like, why are we doing this? It's like the old logbook for glucose readings. You know, they fill out the logbook and the doctor says, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, thanks. And it's like, you asked me to do this every day and you don't even look at it. Well, technology has enabled them to not just look at it, but set alerts around it, set notes and clinical decision support pathways around it. So we've actually made it easier for the physician and more meaningful for the patient to do this. And that reduces dropout, drives attrition as well.
What does the patient actually need, both in terms of technology and I guess in terms of access to the physician or their provider from their end to make this successful?
That's a really topical question now, because technology matters here, right? And our approach, our sort of conviction is that technology should be invisible for the patient. So if a patient has to do whatever the clinical staff asks them to do, blood pressure reading, get on a scale, do a glucose or pulse ox reading, and then have to fiddle around with their smartphone or something, sync and pair and transmit the data, they're likely not to stay with that program because something's going to go wrong. They're on an old version of Android. They're on an old version of iOS. There's a bug in it. Their data doesn't come into their office. Something's going to go wrong. And so what we've really been an advocate for a couple of different approaches. One is platform to platform integration. So for example, with our partner Dexcom, we have done a platform to platform integration. So the patient just uses the Dexcom as they always have. And then the data comes into our platform to provide the provider with that ongoing data. For normal BGM readings on glucose or scales or blood pressure, we've really advocated for cellular technologies where the patient does the blood pressure reading and then the data just sort of automagically kind of goes into our platform. Patient doesn't have to worry about it at all. And this is, you know, particularly true. You know, these cardiometabolic diseases, chronic conditions, skew pretty heavily toward Medicare, Medicaid populations. They might not have the latest smartphone technology. They may not be that tech savvy. And so to put that burden on them is a real hardship, and it does drive sort of fallout from the program.
I want to talk about RPM and telehealth. How does RPM and telehealth visits complement each other? And how can physicians sort of use them to get the best, you know, kind of wraparound care for their patients?
You know, this is really interesting. And telehealth grew dramatically with COVID for obvious reasons. And just like sort of asynchronous monitoring of patients, it should have grown well before COVID, right? It's a very efficient proxy for an in-clinic visit, but it's very convenient for the patient, right? They can stay home, they can be at work, they don't have to take half a day off work and then go to a lobby and sit in a lobby and wait for, you know, a 15-minute meeting with their physician. So suddenly you have this sort of patient-centric, patient-focused care delivery mechanism. But that was sort of, there was a camp that was around telehealth. Like, we do video. That's what we do. We don't need this other stuff. Well, you do need that other stuff, and you need to pull that together in an integrated fashion. So we are very much encouraging, and our platform reflects this, that all of these ways, video chat, scheduled video appointments, asynchronous monitoring, texting, attaching things, digital education to URLs and sending to patients, all these things are just different tools in the toolkit around remote patient engagement. And so we're pulling this technology together to make it a seamless approach. So you have essentially telehealth, which actually means both asynchronous and synchronous means of engaging those patients.
What's the future of remote patient monitoring look like? And I'm just wondering, you know, what innovations or sort of new things physicians can sort of look into the future and expect.
Well, when, you know, over the last couple of years, when I talk to physicians or CMOs and health systems, and they're a little bit reticent around RPM technologies or programs, I always ask the question, do you imagine that in 10 years, any patient, whether it's transitional care, post-acute care, chronic care, that any patient won't be remotely monitored? I mean, can you imagine a future where everyone's not remotely monitored if they have a condition? And the answer is always no, right? So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of progress in sensor technology. And we're already seeing this real time. We're seeing watches that have pulse ox capabilities. We see pulse, we see EKGs. So, you know, we're still in this sort of early evolutionary stage of RPM where we have kind of clunky devices. You send them home, it's a BGM or a blood pressure cuff. We're going to see this phase pass pretty quickly. And you're immersed in this. You see actually measure potentially someone's blood pressure, their temperature, their pulse from a photograph, from a film. There are other sensors, obviously, around glucose readings through watches, et cetera, that are not FDA approved yet, but they're coming online very quickly. The evolution of the market then is, how do you take all these data points and make them useful and actionable for physicians? It's not as if physicians don't have enough data right now. They don't have enough usable, actionable information right now. So there are two sides of RPM. One are sensors to the read, the patient, understand that the physiologic sort of status of that patient. The other is to bring this into the core clinical workflow, integrate it with the data from the EHR, and present it, visualize it in a way that goes, oh, okay, the physician says, okay, I'm seeing these data points and I know what to do now. And part of that is overlaying clinical decision support on top of RPM, on top of these now cleaner, richer data sets, which is where Remedy's real focus is. But I think that's where the market's going to evolve very quickly.
Is there anything else that we haven't discussed that you think it's important for physicians to know about RPM and about these technologies?
Just to restate a couple of the points, it doesn't have to be that difficult. The technology's there, it's reliable. Pay attention to what you do with the RPM data. Integrate it into your current workflow and then enhance your workflow, continuously improve your workflow from that point on. But let me also make just a point, bringing it back to kind of the macro kind of view of this. Our health system is sort of a hodgepodge of sort of misaligned financial incentives, different approaches to care delivery, et cetera. And I think that all of this, these sort of very granular sort of focus on monitoring patients remotely, overlaying clinical decision support, driving toward a standard of care, focus on improving quality outcomes and taking advantage of these alternative revenue streams are all in aid of reducing our overall cost of care and improving outcomes. And it's one of these weird economic sectors where improvement is absolutely correlated with reduction in cost. So we're incredibly bullish that this is completely solvable. And this is the approach to start grinding out a solution to really re-engineer how we do care delivery in the U.S.
Josh Klayman, thank you very much for joining me and for your insights today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And be sure to visit our website at medicaleconomics.com, where you'll find all the latest news about the business of healthcare. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.